When you don't understand, lean in more. When it challenges your intelligence, lean in more. When it makes you feel stupid, lean in more. Leaning out will leave you behind.
Welcome to the One Up Project.
Money is fuel that allows you to do things. It doesn't need to be taboo.
What you don't want to do is wake up at 65 realizing you did something you hated and have regret.
Go and find people who will give you advice for nothing.
This is a space for personal growth and money chat with new perspectives every Monday.
This bit of content, listening to this, is going to be a small little breadcrumb of something that makes them think a little bit differently.
For all the things we were never taught but should have been.
At the end of the day, the most important person is yourself, and if you're not happy with your own choices, then you're never going to be happy.
Kia ora everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the One Up Project podcast. Today we are talking about The Diary of a CEO. That is a book and a podcast hosted and written by one of my idols in the industry, I guess, someone I really look up to, admire, feel very inspired by. That's Stephen Bartlett. I'm sure so many of you who listen to this podcast also listen to that one or have listened in the past. Quite aligning themes. And I have been wanting to read his book for ages because I am actually going to his live show this week, this Friday in Sydney, which I'm so excited about, obviously. And I will take you guys along. I've been doing vlogs on my vlogging era, guys. I've been doing vlogs on my TikTok recently and just trying to get more into sharing lifestyle related things. And I'm a bit more casual on TikTok, and that's just a place where I want to be, free to share those kinds of things. So head over there if you're interested in seeing more. But in this episode, I thought we'd talk a bit about the book itself and review some things that I'm wanting to incorporate into my own life. And then when I've gone to the show, I'll also do an episode recapping what I learned from that and then bringing through themes of the book. So this book is called The Diary of a CEO, The 33 Laws of Business and Life. I'm not going to go through every single law today, but I'm going to go through the top five, possibly six laws that resonated the most with me that I will be carrying through in 2024. To be honest, all of them hit home in a different way. And the weird thing I found while reading this book was that it was almost like a horoscope. Every time I read a new chapter, it was relevant to the life I am living right now. And it seemed to just touch on things that I really, really needed to hear, which I will also go into in this episode. The first law that hit home for me was actually the second law, which is to master it, you must create an obligation to teach it. Recently, I've started posting on LinkedIn a lot, and I haven't usually been a big LinkedIn poster, and sometimes it can intimidate me. But one thing that inspired me through the story was that Stephen Bartlett spoke about how to become a master at what he wanted to learn. In the marketing space, I believe, he would commit to teaching people what he'd learned in a Twitter post. And so he committed to doing that every single day so that he gained an audience and a community that were interested in hearing his learnings and how he'd break them down every single day. I've been trying to do that on LinkedIn because what I am trying to learn more about is creating more meaningful solutions, more meaningful products, more meaningful services that can help contribute to a better world, which means I require an understanding of what it means to create a meaningful solution, what it means to connect with people, what it means to help people, and all the different perspectives I bring on to the podcast influence that learning. And so in order for me to master that myself, I need to create an obligation to teach it, which is what I'm doing over on LinkedIn. And you can go and check that out as well if you're interested in reading more of my posts. He says in this chapter, if you want to master something, do it publicly and do it consistently. If there's been any example of this in my lifetime, it is on the One Up Project because, oh my goodness, from the start, learning about financial literacy and self-development, I have done that very much publicly and very much consistently. The time I quit my corporate job after getting a scholarship and a grad role, you guys heard about it. The time I went traveling after pretty much being made redundant, you guys heard about it. Like everything I've wanted to learn and grow for myself has been shown publicly and consistently through the One Up Project podcast and on the Instagram as well, just across socials everywhere. Sometimes the thought of everything being public for anyone to see at any time and go back to, scares me, obviously, because there are so many parts of my perspective that have changed now, but I locked into those podcasts in the past. It scares me, but it also is, I think, such a privilege, really, to have so many of my previous selves accessible to look back on and to see how far I have gone with my own way of thinking. Not that I ever really listen back at the moment because I cringe. I feel like it's too soon. You know, if it was 10 years in the distance, in the future, maybe it would be so far that I'm like, I'm so distant from that person now, it's okay. But 4 years ago still feels reasonably recent, especially for all the growth I think I have had. So I'm just not looking back at that at the moment, but it is nice to have those things available. So anyway, he says, if you want to master something, do it publicly and do it consistently. You become a master when you release that information, not obtain it. And so the key thing here is that to be someone who knows what they're talking about, to be someone who can teach others how to do it, we need to actually release that information, not keep it for ourselves. So if we read a book about finance, don't just take in all of that information you've now learned about personal finance. Teach it to someone else, tell your friend, tell your parents, tell anyone that will listen, because that is how you actually ingrain that information into your brain. But you will also then become so much more confident at using that information in a real context. I've found that a lot with the podcast, because obviously as I've learned more about personal finance, I've not only had to do that in my real life, but I've had to have conversations with other people about it. And the more that I have those conversations, the more it cements what I believe and what I don't believe in my head. And I get such a clear idea of what I value, what I believe in. And that gives me a pretty strong understanding of who I am as a person, which I think is a very comforting thing to have in your life. So this year, as I said, I am committing to doing this myself by posting on LinkedIn. So watch out as I become more skilled in the product marketing, product development, solutions space. I really want to contribute to more meaningful, more impactful solutions, and I want to be able to do that every day. And so the first thing I need to do is share my learnings on how to do that with other people. The next law that just hit home for me was law number 5. You must lean into bizarre behavior. This relates to, I think, one of the main patterns and themes I've always had throughout the podcast, which is stay curious. Replace judgment with curiosity. Lean into bizarre behavior. What I took from this was not only lean into your own bizarre behavior, but lean into others' bizarre behavior. Often when we are judging someone else or we are thinking they are odd or strange, all it is a reflection of our own internal bias that we haven't yet addressed. And that's something I have consistently worked on over the last couple of years when looking at people who live differently to me, who think differently to me, who act differently to me. I lean into that so much more. The weirder it is, the more interesting, the more fascinating, the more curious I am about it. Because I do not, or at least try my hardest, not to let my ego make me believe that I am right or I even have the slightest idea of what is right. All I am confident about is that I am a curious human who wants to learn more, and that's all I know about who I want to be and what is right at this stage. I'm open to the interpretations of life, and so leaning into that bizarre behavior is something I always want to be implementing. There was a quote from this law which I think I literally circled, highlighted, exclamation marked it. I was like, this explains so much of the way that I have thought as a result of having one up and as a result of being as curious as I can. And I'm going to read it out to you. So the quote says, despite what online tribalism might tempt you to believe, your most important beliefs should not be binary. Lean in, people. That's us. We're lean in people because we lean in to the bizarre. Lean in people can see the mirror of the old way and the new way at the same time without the compulsion to reject or condemn either. What I took from this quote was that online we've got cancel culture, etc., etc. We've got, you say one wrong thing, you're instantly labeled as a horrible person who cannot return, who cannot have accountability, who cannot have redemption or forgiveness. You're just a horrendous person. Especially if it goes against the common knowledge of today or the common opinions of today. There's not enough comfort in the gray space. There's not enough allowance for some things to be just what they are, neither right or wrong, just a result of how the world works. And I will always try my hardest to be a lean-in person who can, as the quote says, see the mirror of the old way and the new way without the compulsion to reject or condemn either. And especially not the compulsion to reject or condemn either person saying it, because we're all humans and empathy has such an important place in the way that we communicate, in the way that we create solutions, in the way that we help others. And I think this quote very much so speaks to that. Being curious has served me so much throughout the time of having one up and throughout my life. It has led me and given me so many opportunities because I haven't turned away from something because it made me feel uncomfortable or because it was confronting or because it may have disrupted my current thoughts. I have been in many situations over the last year, one specific situation that made me feel very uncomfortable in a way that was, I knew I was going to learn lots and be confronted by many biases, by many ways of thinking. And I was scared of that. I was uncomfortable. I was worried that I was going to be made out as one of these bad people who was wrong. But actually what I came to understand was that people just want to find some common understanding and they want to be heard and they want to be understood. And once you can implement that empathy into your curiosity, you develop the deepest and most meaningful connections with other people. Ones that I have made over the last year I would never take for granted and that I'll hold in the most special place forever. Friendships and connections that I would not have had I have not been as curious and as willing to be wrong as I was. The last quote within this law that really, really hit home for me was, when you don't understand, lean in more. When it challenges your intelligence, lean in more. When it makes you feel stupid, lean in more. Leaning out will leave you behind. When there's old people in a corporate office who never want to learn about the new ways, who never want to hear the young person's perspective, what do we call them? We call them dinosaurs. And we call them dinosaurs for a reason, because they are going to get left behind in the dust. And you don't actually have to be old to be a dinosaur. You just have to be someone who isn't open to any other perspective than your tunnel vision view. And I know that's going to be absolutely no one listening to this podcast, because you all are such empathetic, open-minded, curious people. That's why you listen to this podcast. But no doubt you know people who aren't open-minded, who aren't empathetic. And to be honest, those are the people who we probably need to be extra empathetic and open-minded to, because we need to make sure that they feel heard so that they don't go even tighter around that tunnel vision. They start to release it. They start to loosen their grip on their worldview and they start to see that, hey, maybe there's actually another way to look at things that doesn't just exist in my own little tunnel. So this year I will be leaning that much more into bizarre behavior. It's actually a fun little challenge, like when you meet people who are so different from you in whatever way, are just different. And we've all met people like this because we've all grown up in our own little tribes, in our own little cultures, in our own little parts of the world. And so it's a fun challenge when you meet people who have lived so differently to you, to just ask as many great, appropriate, interesting questions that you can, to try and get an idea of not only how is this different and why people might do things that way, but if there's anything you can take from that, any patterns, any breadcrumbs of value, of importance that you can take back to the way that you live. Sometimes you'll meet people and you'll be like, okay, no, that just wasn't my vibe. And that's all good too. There's no need to discount that vibe either. It is what it is. It wasn't your vibe. We can move on. But definitely keeping that curiosity, that just authentic curiosity about other people and other ways of life, will help bring forward so many opportunities for you. The next law that I am taking into 2024 is that you must sweat the small stuff. And this kind of goes into the following law after that, which is law 21, you must outfail the competition. This law was one I'd actually heard Stephen Bartlett talk a lot about on his podcast, and I kept saying to people, I disagree with that law. I disagree with it. And the reason I disagreed with it was because the way it was described always seemed like it was, we stress every little detail. If one thing is out of place, it's not good enough. And I used to think, well, how much stress is that putting on your team when that's the culture you have? But after reading the chapter about it, I'm realizing, okay, that's not the full context and extent of what this law means. What this law actually means is relentless focus on the smallest details so that every day you're improving 1%. It's making small things better in small ways everywhere you can, while instilling a culture within people, within your business, within your team, where people feel empowered to do that and feel like that's a motivational step. It doesn't mean if they get things wrong, it's not okay. It means that every small improvement is a contributing factor to the bigger vision, to the bigger mission. And so sweating the small stuff starts with people collectively believing in something. I really love the way this book talked about creating teams and empowering people within the team rather than having every decision and every idea come from the top level of the hierarchy. This book spoke about how innovation is the everyday task of every single person in the world. It's not reserved for just certain people. And I love that because I think coming up in like a typical corporate career at the very start of leaving university, etc., it was always just clear to me that the top people do the strategy, they do the high level thinking, they do the vision, the big vision thinking. People at the bottom, we do the tasks and the executing. And I used to think like, I'm not really the best executor, to be honest. I'm really not. And I don't actually know if I'm the best strategist either, but I'd like at least to give it a go first. But it never felt like an accessible thing to reach, especially early on in your career. And to build a team that feels fully empowered, which in many corporate environments the team is not fully empowered, they need to feel connected to that innovation piece and like their ideas matter and they can contribute things of true value to the team. Steve Jobs had actually said that his greatest innovation was his team, and I think that is true leadership. That is someone who is clear on the importance being with the people rather than being with the one person at the top. I also think this idea can resonate a lot with activism and how typically in the world of activism, first of all, people put off initially by that word in itself, but typically when it comes to fighting for change or creating a meaningful solution to a problem or fighting societal issues, whatever it is, people can often feel intimidated by that because there seems like there's so much work to do and someone's little contribution isn't going to matter. What does it matter if I recycle or do this when we're facing a huge climate crisis, etc.? All these little things. But the point of this law was that small changes are not really about the individual as much as they are about what they add up to. So it's not about you and what you can do. It's about how your small change contributes to a much bigger picture. A common theme of this book is how humans, we constantly believe we're logical people, but we're not. We're completely emotional. And I think that this concept speaks to that because we think, well, logically, if we make one difference in our lives, that's not going to change anything. That's not going to make a huge impact. But actually, if you switch your thinking to think, well, if I make this small change and everyone else makes this small change, then that should add up to big change. And that's a logical solution. So sweating the small stuff is something I want to do a lot more in my life this year, even with the podcast as well, like start upping the quality of the audio and even the video and the content that comes out, like really just start making incremental improvements to all the different touch points I have with you guys, I have with myself, I have with anyone in order to produce something that is both more impactful, more meaningful and just a better experience for people. The next law that I absolutely adored was Law 21, you must outfail the competition. Thank God I've read this chapter and the next one because they have been ingrained into my brain and I want to ingrain them a million times more so that I never forget it, especially on the journey that I am where I'm coming into a lot of income uncertainty, a lot of life uncertainty. And I want to make sure that I get this shit done, that I achieve my goals. And so this law, you must outfail the competition, helped completely reduce my fear of failure, where failure is a requirement for success. One of the quotes was that failure and invention are inseparable twins. To invent, you have to experiment. So to invent something new, to innovate, to succeed, you have to experiment, you have to fail. I posted something on Instagram the other day that was definitely inspired by this chapter, and it was that I'm no longer taking risks, I'm just experimenting, and that's what I'm doing now. I'm just experimenting. I'm just trying out this job application site. I'm just trying out this new country. I'm just trying to learn this new thing, this new conversation, and I want other people to learn from that as well. I'm just experimenting. I don't know what's going to be right. I don't know what's going to help me achieve my goals. I don't know what's going to make me successful, whatever my definition of that is, but it's going to teach me something, and I have to experiment. It's just a natural part of finding success. And not only do I have to experiment, I have to fail. This is when my chance of success is only upped, right? And then the next law is law 22. You must become a plan A thinker. This law is my life right now. You could probably guess what it's about. Becoming a plan A thinker means you will not have a plan B. There is no plan B. There is no security blanket. And that is my year this year. It is all about the plan A and not about plan B at all. The quote in the book says, not having a plan B will be the most incredible motivational force in your life. And that will be me. Often there will be a lot of privilege and freedom that comes with being a plan A thinker, right? Because if you can think, well, the worst that can happen isn't that bad, then you instantly have more capacity to take risk. Whereas if you're taking risk and actually the consequences could be really bad, then your capacity to take risk is less because you have more to lose. And for me, I'll always be grateful that I, at this stage of my life, have the capacity to take on a plan A and to not have a plan B. But I think anyone can adopt this mindset if you are willing and able to take that risk, no matter the consequences. It talks about in the book how having a backup plan or even considering one can actually be detrimental to your performance. And so this concept needs to be applied to goals where success is highly dependent on effort. So if you have to get out and train and be better at something, then having a plan A or thinking, being a plan A thinker is going to be really motivational for that goal because you don't have another choice. You have to get out there and get it done. My word of the year this year is fearless, and this relates so much to this law where I need to embrace my fear of failure, not try and remove it. In fact, if anything, I need to increase it because that's what's going to give me that momentum, that motivation to keep pushing forward with whatever it is I want to do. A closing quote of this law, which I absolutely loved, was, in the pursuit of your most important goals, a backup plan is an additional weight to carry, a motivational burden to bring, and distracting companion to call. Your plan B is always going to distract you from your plan A and might even be the reason that you don't get plan A at all. So don't give yourself the excuses and be a plan A thinker. The last impactful law that I think sums up so much of what I've spoken about and relates very seamlessly to the previous thing I've spoken about is you must make pressure your privilege. Life without pressure is a life without purpose, and having a problem to solve is the greatest purpose of all, is some quotes from that book. Jordan Peterson, who is someone that's often on a lot of podcasts like this, he also said a quote similar around having a problem to solve is one of the greatest purposes of all. And it doesn't matter what that problem to solve is. You could be solving global poverty. You could be solving your kid's breakfast in the morning. You could be solving the printer issue at work. Having a problem to solve that is your responsibility to solve is where purpose is born. And that is where you can make pressure your privilege, where that is what's going to motivate you. That is what's going to give you strength to move on to the next thing because you have to, because that pressure is the privilege of having some kind of purpose in your life. It's all about making sure that that problem is worth solving, right? If the pressure is not worthwhile, there is something wrong. Even if it's a problem that you didn't bring on yourself, is the pursuit of solving the problem and the pressure that comes with that a worthwhile pursuit for you? Within this chapter, it also spoke about the physical symptoms or impacts of pressure being stress, being anxiety, being heart rate spikes, things like that. And I've always been told, or at least I've just always thought, that stress in the body is really bad for you health-wise. Like, it's not healthy to have stress in your body. Weirdly, so many of the studies and the things that were brought up within this book was that actually stress is fine and can actually be healthy for you if you don't think of it as being bad for you. And the study, I feel like I'm probably butchering the explanation of that, but the study that was shown or spoken about in the book was that people who believed that the stress was fine. They embraced the stress. They accepted the stress. They actually had a much healthier cardiovascular response. And it actually tended to replicate some feelings of joy and courage in the body as well. And for me, I've always seen, you know, stress is bad. You don't want stress in the body. Calm yourself down. Get into a place of zen. But this book actually helped me to think maybe I need to see my symptoms of pressure as a sign that my body is just energizing me in preparation to face a challenge. It's just a natural reaction to whatever it is I'm going through, to whatever pressure I face. And it's okay. I don't need to reject the stress. I don't need to be angry at it. I just need to accept it and embrace that it's a natural part of what's happening in my life right now. And it is what it is. And let's use it. Let's not reject it. Let's actually use it to get something done faster, better. They talk about adopting a stress-enhancing mindset, or a stress is enhancing mindset. When you acknowledge and you label your stress, your brain actually allows you to choose a more enhancing response than a reactive emotion. And this is the importance, guys, of talking about our feelings. I had a situation recently where I'm traveling with a friend of mine, and I wasn't really sharing a few of my stresses and frustrations that I was having in my own life around work. And just some pressure I was feeling, I didn't voice it, because for me, I'm the kind of person who I'm happy to ask for help in some areas of my life, but sometimes I'm like a cat. Like if I feel sick, like I'm gonna die, like I'm not in a healthy space, I like to leave and hide and do that in silence and in private. Like the reason I say like a cat, because if you don't know much about cats, when they are dying or when they're sick, they just hide and they go off and they go away from everyone. So that's what I'm like. I just like to lock myself away, be alone in my own thoughts. I don't want to talk to anyone about it. And then it got to the point where I just had to talk to someone about it, because there's only the two of us here and we're in quite an isolated space. So I opened up about it, and what do you know? I felt way better about it. Wow, who would have thought? And it made so much sense when I read it in this book, that when you actually acknowledge and label the stress, when you say it out loud, when you share your feelings with another person, your brain actually allows you to more effectively react to that emotion. And to do it in a way that you are happier with, to not be emotionally reactive, but to actually choose something that's enhancing, that's helpful for that emotion you're feeling. When we choose to connect with others under stress, an incredible resiliency is created, was a quote from this book. And it is so true, and something I so often forget is when you do open yourself up to others, when you are vulnerable, especially under stress, you create a resiliency, which is why sharing your emotions and being vulnerable is so much braver, so much courageous, so much more courageous, and so much stronger than keeping silent, as hard as it can be to do. And that's the thing. Brave things, courageous things are hard. They're so, so difficult. They're painful. None of us really want to do things that cause us psychological discomfort. It's not wired in us to embrace that. We want to avoid it at all costs. But actually, it can be so much healthier for you physically and emotionally to release that to someone else. So if you are looking for growth in any area of your life, choose the challenge, choose the harder thing. I am very much speaking to myself. As I said, I had that personal example where I need to get better at releasing my emotions with other people. And that is something I actively want to work on as well, as a part of making any pressure I feel my privilege, and actually using that in a way that's productive and healthy, rather than saying I can deal with it all on my own and ultimately being completely ineffective and unhelpful to the people around me. So those are just a few of the laws that I will be taking into 2024. Let me know what you thought of those, if you agree, if you took anything from this, and if you want to have a conversation further about any of these, I would absolutely love to, over on Instagram at The One Up Project. And I am kind of keen to go into more of these laws as I use them throughout the year, as they develop in my own life, and bring in some more personal examples as well. So if there's anything you want to hear about in particular, you just let me know and I will be more than happy to do it. Thank you so much for listening. I cannot wait to speak to you again, especially after seeing Stephen Bartlett live, and we will talk soon. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The One Up Project. If you want to find more stuff just like this, check out our other apps or follow us at The One Up Project on Instagram or TikTok. See you there.